following is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast.
And now here's your host, Ian Turner.
Good evening. On the program today, we're excited to bring you the latest in campus and community news, from the Olympics and homelessness to transportation and free food. We'll hear from John Richardson of Pivot Legal Society about the Red Tenant campaign coinciding with the upcoming Olympic Games. We'll offer you your coverage of the recent Rethinking the Olympics workshop that took place on campus this weekend. We'll also highlight transportation woes facing Vancouverites during the coming weeks. We'll have all this plus your weekend weather forecast coming up this hour right here on News 101. But first, we bring you further coverage of homelessness in the city. On the line, we have John Richardson, Executive Director of Pivot Legal Society. The Pivot Legal Society is hoping to see 500 red tents marking Vancouver streets during the Olympic Games, helping the city's most needy and asking citizens and tourists to take notice of one of Vancouver's most pressing issues. For that, we turn to reporter Andrew Longhurst in studio.
Hi, John. Thanks for being with us.
No, my pleasure.
Can you just give us a little idea, or give us some context about this campaign, and just a little idea, just speak to what it represents?
Sure. Well, regarding context, this campaign follows in the footsteps of a campaign that was conducted along very similar lines in Paris, France, in 2006. A homeless organization called the Les Enfants de Don Quixote gave away 200 red tents to homeless people, and they camped along the Seine River. And you can see, actually, if you go to Google Images, you can see, type in Red Tents Paris, you can see images of it. It's just amazing, the visuals. And so it was an extremely powerful campaign. And it, in the end, it actually resulted in the French government agreeing to implement a national housing policy to respond to the public pressure that got created around the red tents.
And this was even without something like the Olympics, where you're bringing the world to...
Absolutely. That's right. This was just in the streets of Paris without any major event. So we're definitely hoping we'll be able to have a similar victory here in Canada. And the goal is also a national one. We're hoping to persuade the federal government to enact a funded national housing strategy. And we can speak a little bit more about that if you like.
Yeah, please do.
Well, over the last years, Pivot has been doing work on housing issues for a number of years now, and our focus has generally been on municipal issues and on provincial issues. But it's become increasingly clear that the real slacker, really, in terms of government inaction, is the federal government. In the futility, you think about it, actually, you can see the futility of any city or province trying to solve housing or homelessness by itself. If one city... eliminated homelessness, people from other cities across Canada, homeless people from other cities across Canada would simply move there. So we really think that it's important that the federal government get really involved in the housing issues once again. It was very involved up until 1993, and then it deferred all responsibility to the provincial governments, but without corresponding funding. And that's why we have seen a massive rise in homelessness over the recent years.
Now, going back to Vancouver and the province, Victoria, the homeless in Victoria are able to pitch tents, and the city can't, if there's no space in shelters, that's completely, they're completely allowed to. Is that correct?
Well, there are some qualifications, and the first one I would say is that it doesn't only apply to Victoria.
Right, and this is something that is applicable to Vancouver, is that
right,
correct?
This is a BC Court of Appeal decision, and it was ruling upon an issue of constitutionality, and it found that Section 7 of the Charter protected, which is the right to life, liberty, and security of the person, protected homeless people's right to have a shelter if there were no other alternatives available. So... it's of general application, and it certainly, in our opinion, applies to Vancouver as well. But it's not an unrestricted right. It doesn't mean that people homeless people now own the streets and now they own the parks. It has to be balanced and has to accommodate other uses. So, municipal governments can accommodate or can enact regulations to ensure that competing needs and desires are balanced. So, for example, it said that people don't necessarily have a right to have a tent all the time. It's a temporary overnight shelter, so people can camp in a park or on public property on an overnight basis. And so there are restrictions in there about making sure that also, property isn't destroyed, parks aren't damaged by overnight shelter taking, etc. So it's a balancing.
And has the city responded to this Red Tent campaign yet?
Well, it certainly has, and we've asked them to ensure that City of Vancouver bylaws are up to date and reflect the changes in law around the Adams decision. Because it came down basically just a month ago, right? And so they haven't had time to update their enforcement policies or their regulations, which are unfortunately out of date. And, the City of Vancouver does not at this time recognize the right of homeless people to erect temporary shelters on public property. And so we're encouraging them to do so.
Do you think other cities across Canada will try out similar campaigns? Do you think?
Well, I don't think cities are going to be doing it. I think that homeless people might be doing it.
Yeah.
Cities are pretty.
Maybe other legal societies will be doing similar things in other cities.
I absolutely hope so. For us, this is not really an Olympic campaign. It's a national campaign, and we're hoping to use the Olympics as kind of a launching pad for this to spread across the country. We're definitely hoping to have red tents springing up in cities all across Canada.
Can you speak a little bit to the number of homeless people that will not be in shelters during the games? And is that on the rise? And do you see that the emergency shelters are insufficient in the city? Or are the new shelters that have recently opened enough to house those that are living on the street?
Right. Yeah, there have been emergency shelters opened recently in Vancouver. I don't think by anybody's calculations it's going to meet the demand. We have a significant number of homeless people in Vancouver, and even with the openings of these heat shelters and et cetera, we're still looking at least a 500-person shortfall, right, in the streets of Vancouver. So, and that's partly because homelessness is rising. Homelessness is rising, unfortunately, pretty rapidly, and in Vancouver is ahead of the pack in terms of creating emergency shelters. In Burnaby, it boggles the mind, but in Burnaby there are zero emergency shelters. So that's quite a crazy number. So a lot of people are finding themselves in Vancouver. At least there are some, So I think it's a pretty massive problem. In British Columbia, there's at least 10,000 homeless people.
Right. Is there anything else that our listeners should be aware of about this campaign or in general?
Well, I think one thing that people might be interested in is that we're encouraging everyone to get involved. There's lots of different ways that people can show their support for a funded national housing strategy, which is the objective of the campaign. They can hang a banner, they can wear a poncho. We're doing a whole kind of line of things in red just to create a color effect, a visual impact for the approximately 15,000 media that are going to be coming to Vancouver. And if people want to hear more information or learn a bit more about it, they can go to our website, which is www.redtents.org.
Great. Well, thank you, John, for your time. We really appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure.
Take care.
Thanks.
That was John Richardson, Executive Director of Pivot Legal Society. We're going to take a quick break now, but stay tuned. When we come back, we'll have coverage of the recent Rethinking the Olympic conference that took place on campus this week. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM.
CITR has more friends than ever before. We've partnered with tons of local businesses to bring you great discounts in the communities where you live, work, and play. Maybe Main Street is your main drag. Present your Friends of CITR card at Red Cat Records, Lucky's Comics, Devil May Wear, Thriller, Blim, Hotbox, The Kiss Store, Slickety Jim's Chat and Chew, The Wallflower Modern Diner, RX Comics, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, The Whip Gallery Restaurant, Vinyl Records, Regional Assembly of Text, and Twig and Hottie to receive fabulous discounts. So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love.
Walking alone at night can be scary!
Stop right there, student. Why walk alone when you can call SafeWalk? The safety and comfort of everyone on campus is important. That's why we're here.
SafeWalk is a free, student-run foot patrol service with two-person co-ed teams that will meet you and accompany you anywhere on campus to make sure you get there safely.
Keep an eye out for our bright red reflective jackets and signature foot logo, and let your next walk be with us.
What a huge relief! Now I'll never have to worry about the terrors that could happen when walking through such a big campus at night.
For a walk, you can call 604-822-5355, use one of our direct line phones located in some of the campus libraries, use one of the big blue phone booths, or even ask campus security to contact us.
If you see walkers around campus, and you'd like them to accompany you, stop and ask.
LiveVan.com is Vancouver's most reputable community-driven concert calendar. New shows are listed daily by the city's most prominent promoters, but also by you. The musicians and fans were the driving force of our local music scene. LiveVan.com's listings are different because they're personalized. They're integrated with local music directories that are constantly updated by the bands, musicians, and businesses who refer to them as they pick locations and lineups for their newest upcoming shows. And no one's barred from contributing, since we all know fans know more about the players than anyone. So visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest major and independent event listings. And while you're at it, check out our archives and discover how closely we all work together in this community, putting on the shows you love.
Welcome back. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, your campus and community news source. In campus news, the Social Justice Center celebrated the third annual Rethinking the Olympics conference this week, an event that advocated for strengthened dialogue among concerned students, staff, and community members. The three-day event ended with a bash last night, and activists claimed skill building from conferences that ranged in topics from art and activism to homelessness and food security. A workshop on food security run by the Vancouver Coalition of Food Not Bombs ended Wednesday afternoon over tense discussions with the UBC administration. According to a press release by the coalition, the volunteers were handing out free food to UBC students Wednesday afternoon in accordance with the group's mandate to serve food in open public spaces when they were shut down by AMS personnel. The group, a coalition of students from across the world, wrote that simply giving out food did not warrant removal by AMS personnel. The event, coinciding with the Rethinking the Olympics conference, highlighted concerns of the group, especially that of authority and privatization of the city. In more campus news, News 101 reporter Andrew Longhurst spoke with Kevin Chan, a UBC student who recently sent a letter to the UBC Olympic Secretariat expressing his concerns over the disappearance of the bike lane on the Westbrook Mall in front of Thunderbird Stadium.
This is Andrew Longhurst for CITR News 101. We're standing at the intersection of Thunderbird Boulevard and Westbrook Mall. Right now, Thunderbird Boulevard is completely closed to traffic, cyclists and motorized traffic. I'm here with Kevin Chan, who recently sent a letter to the UBC Olympic Secretariat indicating his concern about the disappearance of the bike lane at along Westbrook Mall in front of Thunderbird Stadium. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. So can you tell me what you said in your letter and why this is a concern to you?
Right. So on January 22nd, the UBC Secretariat sent out an email talking about how there was going to be road closures, as you just said, on Thunderbird Boulevard, but made absolutely no mention that starting actually at the beginning of that week, on January 18th, there is now concrete barriers sitting on top of the bike path path, starting on Thunderbird Boulevard and extending for maybe 150 meters or so. I found this mainly concerning, not because the bike path was closed, but that absolutely no mention of this was made by UBC, VanOck, or anybody else. No signs were posted, no warning given, and in the email talking about road closures, it claimed that pedestrian and cyclist traffic would have full access to campus and, in fact, the entire city during the Olympic events, which is clearly not the case, as you can see by these barriers that are sitting on top of the bikeway right now.
So you've clearly been commuting along Westbrook Mall, is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. At least a couple of times a week. Sometimes I go at University Boulevard as well.
Okay. And how do you feel riding along Westbrook at this point?
For the most part, I'm all right. I feel, as cyclists go, I'm fairly confident. So it's just when I get to this place, I have to make sure to be extra cautious to move out and take the lane for my own safety, which is also a little upsetting for some drivers, as you might understand. It was mainly the first time when I came upon, and I was completely struck by this disappearance of a lane that I fully expected to be there. That was a bit startling because I had to make a quick maneuver out into the main lane of traffic, or else run into a concrete pillar.
We're here at the intersection, and we're seeing a number of large trucks go by, cars as well, and a number of buses. There's really not much room for cyclists, and because they're concrete barricades, there's no way for cyclists to move out of the way if they need to. So it looks like it is problematic for cyclists and potentially quite a hazard.
Yeah, it definitely is a hazard, especially if you don't know that you have no warning that it's going to be happening. And as I mentioned in my letter to the UBC Secretariat, this could have been easily addressed by some more warning, letting people know that it was going to happen, maybe posting some signs 100 meters before you get to the bike lane, or posting some signs reminding car drivers that cyclists will have to take the lane for their own safety. But since none of this was done, and in fact, no mention has been made of it, it is still a hazard, especially for people who haven't come this way yet, but maybe in the next couple days.
When did you send the letter to the UBC Olympic Secretariat?
I sent the letter on January 22nd. That was the same day that the game time announcement talking about the road closures on Thunderbird Boulevard was sent out. So I sent it right away.
And have you gotten a response from the UBC Olympic Secretariat?
I actually did. I was a bit dubious. I didn't think I would get any response at all, but I apparently should have given them a benefit of the doubt. Wednesday night, I got an email saying that they thanked me for my letter and that, in fact, they would talk to VanOck about this issue. What that means, I can't really say, but we'll hopefully find out in the next couple of days.
You're obviously a cycling advocate in this city. UBC is one example of the number of road lane changes, bike lane changes, and road closures. Can you speak to some of the changes that have occurred and closures around the city, and how that impacts cyclists not only on the UBC campus but throughout Vancouver?
Yeah, I think for the most part, cyclists, depending on what route you have taken, you may be completely inconvenienced, or you may not even notice that any changes have taken place. Some of the major ones that I've heard talked about are, of course, around the Olympic Village, where there's now a security perimeter, so obviously there's no cycling that's really possible there. That's probably the main problem around that. And as well as around most Olympic venues, there's definitely some obstruction. Another one issue that I have heard raised is along some bike paths, brackets have been attached to walls and things, in order to attach banners later on once events start, which are kind of hazardous because sometimes they're along the side of the bikeway. I haven't actually experienced any of this myself, but I have heard a lot of complaints about some of these other hazards that are popping up all over the place.
Do you feel that this bike lane, the disappearance of this bike lane without any prior notification, represents a larger problem for cyclists in Vancouver that VanOck is and the city are overlooking some of these problems and lane closures for cyclists?
Yeah, definitely. As I noted in my letter, I kind of see this as a typical kind of car-centered arrogance that is experienced by VanOck, in fact, UBC, many other organizations and individuals. And it's that mainly the key point is, although there are claims that road closures will not affect cyclists, that's based on the assumption that cycleways are in fact not roadways. So by closing this and making no notice of it and saying that road closures, in fact, in the case of UBC, is only happening on Thunderbird Boulevard, what you're telling me is that this is not part of the roadway and, in fact, is less important than the roadway that car drivers use just because it's not used by car drivers. So I find that it's insulting, in a way, to tell me that my form of transportation is less valid than, say, a car. I understand that this is often the case and is often very unfortunate case, but that does seem to be true of many parts of the city, not just UBC. Which is quite unfortunate.
Some people may argue, though, that this is a small inconvenience. We're having the Olympics in Vancouver. It's not going to be a permanent change, and that really people should just suck it up and deal with this because we do need to make more space, and there are changes that need to be made, obviously, for the Games. How would you respond to those arguments?
Well, it's kind of a complicated answer. On some level, it's hard to dispute that kind of argument. But at the same time, it's almost not an argument at all. If you put a concrete barrier in front of my way and say I or another cyclist injures ourselves or is somehow damaged, is that really worth the cost? And the other kind of issue is that it's bigger than a single event. It's not just the Olympics, it's sort of cycling in general. We've made strides to create new cycling facilities across the city, but at the same time, this kind of neglect for creating really amazing facilities citywide is patchy at best. So it's sort of a bigger issue than just a single bike lane or a single stretch of pavement, which is what makes it a more important issue for me.
Great. Well, thank you, Kevin, for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Andrew also spoke with one cyclist on his way down Westbrook Mall.
What's your name?
Anthony.
You're riding along Westbrook Mall in front of the stadium, Thunderbird Stadium. And what's the bike lane like right here?
The bike lane is patchy, in places non-existent.
Do you feel secure riding along this road without the bike lane?
Right now, I don't feel too unsafe riding down this road, but if it were busier traffic, I would definitely be hesitant.
Do you think this is problematic for cyclists on campus who commute every day?
Yeah, I mean, it's discouraging for cyclists who have to use this road. I mean, it's not encouraging cycling.
Have you found just throughout Vancouver with the Olympics closures that have been problematic around the city?
Well, I haven't biked too far off campus recently, so I can't really comment.
Okay. Thank you.
The UBC Olympic secretary acknowledged receiving the letter from Kevin Chan, but they did not reach News 101 for comment before our deadline today. It's now time for a quick break, but stay tuned for more national and provincial news. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
The East Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
Do you have an approaching test or exam and need help studying? Well, it's time to prepare yourself. The Study Van, www.studyvan.com, is a 100% free website dedicated to helping you achieve excellence. MCAT, history, chemistry, French, math, biology, the Study Van covers it all. Tools are provided so you can create your own study group and do what you need to do. Ace your exam. The Study Van will help you help yourself. Give it a shot. You have nothing to lose, as once again, it is a 100% free studying resource. So remember, when you need to study, go to the Study Van, www.studyban.com.
Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds.
We are now going to practice our continental way of eating. We pick up our silverware, index finger in the back of the fork, index finger on top of the knife.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Luckily, dining at the Sub is a little less formal.
Come to the Moon Noodle Bar, located in the lower level of the Sub, for fast and friendly service. We serve up spring rolls, combos, chicken wings, rice bowls, and made-to-order stir fries, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Ever thought about volunteering with Big Sisters? Maybe now is the time. Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland provides girls aged 7 to 17 with a champion, a mentor who's there to simply be their friend and cheer them on. Become a study buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a Big Sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca to find out more. Maybe now is the time.
Welcome back. You're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us today. The current time is 5:30, and it's time for your weekend weather. And for that, we turn to Denise Diotic.
Happy Friday, everyone. It's been a week of weather fluctuations from sun to light rain. The reason for this is that we have entered an El Niño year, the first one for a while, and with that, bringing warmer weather than is usual. El Niño is characterized by unusually warm temperatures in the Pacific Ocean that affect rainfall and land temperature. El Niño is thought to occur during changes in the normal pattern of trade wind circulation. Normally, these winds move out westward, carrying warm surface water to Indonesia and Australia, and allowing cooler water to upwell along the South American coast. For reasons not yet fully understood, these trade winds can sometimes be reduced or even reversed. This moves warmer waters towards the coast of South America and raises water temperature. Warmer water causes heat and moisture to rise from the ocean of Ecuador and Peru, resulting in more frequent storms and torrential rainfall over these normally arid countries. It also affects us in the Pacific Northwest. So, bringing with that, here is your forecast for the weekend of January 29th to 31st. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low of 5 degrees. Saturday, cloudy with likely showers, high of 8 degrees, low of 4. Sunday is also expected to be the same, with a few showers likely, high of 8, low of 4. That's your weekend weather, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. Currently, it's 8 degrees and drizzly at YVR. For News 101, I'm Denise Diotic.
Thanks to Denise for that. We now bring you Eyes on the Street coverage, opinions gathered earlier today from students and community members about transportation during the Games. We asked them how preparation for the Olympics has affected their commute. Here's what they had to say.
Not really, at this point. I guess it would be kind of tough during the Olympic Games. Probably February.
Great, thank you.
So far, no. Yeah, I expect it will be a lot worse.
Are you going to be coming to campus during the Olympics?
Yeah, I have to work, so I'll be coming here.
I've noticed the beeline has been busier. Yeah. Much, much busier.
And will you be coming to campus during the Olympics?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess you expect it to be much harder then?
Yes.
Not really, but I'm pretty excited. So I haven't seen any difference on the campus, but a little bit more crowd in the downtown area.
Just a little bit extra traffic, but probably not much.
Not yet. Nothing so far. I used to live downtown, and it would be worse that I don't live downtown anymore, so it's fine.
I don't actually know yet. I haven't looked on the website. Things have changed.
Have you noticed, for example, if the buses are much busier, that they run less frequently now?
Not yet. But I don't expect it to change for a couple weeks, I guess.
Okay. Do you expect it to be easier or harder during the Olympics?
Definitely harder.
Will you be coming to the games?
Probably a couple times, yeah.
Not really, aside from Candleline opening. That's it.
Do you expect it to be, will you be coming to campus during the Olympics?
I don't think so. I'll mostly be going downtown rather than up here.
Not at all, because I live on res.
How will your commute be affected? Will you be using the transit system during the Olympics?
Yeah, it might be to go home or to Surrey.
Do you think it'll be much more difficult to get home now?
Probably, yeah. There'll probably be a lot more cars on the road. And the buses will probably be, I guess, packed more.
No. And will you be coming to campus during the Olympics?
It hasn't been affected at all, I don't think. I just take the 49th, and then it only takes me half an hour, and it has always taken me half an hour.
Do you think it's going to be harder to come to campus during the Olympics?
Probably. But then we have reading break, don't we? So
you won't be coming to campus?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
My commute hasn't been affected, really.
And will you be coming to campus during the Olympics?
No, I'm going away.
And yourself?
Oh, I will. I'll be taking the B-line.
And has your commute to campus been affected by the Olympic preparation?
Not as yet.
We're going to take a quick break now, and when we get back, we'll bring you an interview with Joe Avery from the BCCLA.
Last night, I left the bar. I was thirsty, and I don't drink wine. I was desperate. I needed blood. I turned to the only place I could. The only place that could possibly help me.
Hello, Canadian Blood Services.
Hello. I need some blood. A. Positive or negative, it doesn't matter.
I'm sorry, we're all out of A positive and negative. Would you like some O instead?
No. No, that won't do. Thank you. Good night. Save me. Save yourself. Give blood voluntarily.
This message was brought to you courtesy of the Canadian Blood Services and CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
The Advocacy Office provides confidential and free representation, guidance, and assistance to students engaged in conflict with UBC. We advocate for students in preparing and attending formal meetings, hearings, and appeals against the university. Specifically, our office helps students with matters of student discipline, such as cheating, collaboration, or plagiarism, assigned standing, admissions, and financial assistance. We can also assist you in appeals to decisions made by UBC Library, parking, or housing. You are not alone. We're here to help. For more information, call 822-9855 or visit the website at www.ams.ubc.ca/advocacy.
Well, the party is off to a good start. Guests are on time. Everyone's out to have fun and to help others fun.
What's the matter? Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
UBC students have an alternative. Looking to unwind? Check out one of the sub's 2 licensed establishments.
The Gallery Lounge is your location for a wide variety of draft beers at student-friendly prices. Come to the gallery for a relaxed atmosphere and great food, including the famous pizza pretzel. Fellow students provide the entertainment with weekly open mic and karaoke nights. The gallery is located on the main concourse of the sub and open Monday through Saturday till 1 a.m. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. All the things she been seen, guess you better find your way back home.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Welcome back. You're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. In provincial and national news, the Supreme Court of Canada announced today their decision to overturn the order to seek Amar Kahar's immediate reparation to Canada. Earlier today, news reporter Andrew Longhurst spoke with Joe Avery, counsel for the BCCLA, about the court's decision.
Can you describe the significance of this Supreme Court decision?
Sure. Well, the Supreme Court of Canada was asked to order the Prime Minister of Canada to request the U.S. government to return Omar Khadr to Canada. And the application by Omar Khadr and supported by the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association, who I acted for, was based on firstly, the proposition that Canada had seriously violated Mr. Khadr's constitutional rights because it was implicated in the torture and abuse by the U.S. government. And the Supreme Court of Canada, in fact, found that to be the case. It was quite a damning indictment of the Canadian government, holding that the Canadian government had been complicit in a violation of Mr. Khadr's constitutional rights. And not just any violation, very serious violation. And that was, of course, the first and necessary step in order to get an order that he be repatriated. But the Supreme Court of Canada didn't go the next step, didn't order the repatriation. It simply declared that Mr. Khadr's rights had been violated by Canada, leaving it to the Prime Minister then to act in accordance with the principles set out by the court, matters of foreign affairs and the Charter. What that means in practical terms is at this stage a bit unknown. I don't think the Prime Minister can simply do nothing. I think what the court did was engage in a what they call a respectful dialogue with the executive branch of government, and the court saw its role as to sort of to declare that the Mr. Khadr's rights have been violated by the government, leaving it to the government then to do the right thing. So, and also the Supreme Court of Canada seems to have left open the possibility that if circumstances change further, Mr. Khadr could come back to them for a more coercive order. Right now, the Supreme Court of Canada said that the situation was a bit in flux. There were some evidentiary gaps in the record and things of that sort. Although Mr. Khadr and I think all of us are disappointed that the court didn't go all the way to order the Prime Minister to request of the U.S. government that Mr. Khadr come back, we're all pretty gratified with what the Supreme Court of Canada did say and do. And to that extent, I don't think the Prime Minister has much to cheer about. In fact, I think the Prime Minister, if he recognizes that the Charter is to be respected by the executive, that he should do something, and he should ask the U.S. government to send Mr. Khadr back.
What happens, though, if the Prime Minister does not order for the repatriation of Mr. Khadr?
I don't know. Maybe nothing, or maybe Mr. Khadr will go back to court. As I said, the Supreme Court of Canada left the door open a little bit to Mr. Khadr at the end of the judgment. I don't have it in front of me, but the court used language to the effect that this is as far as they were prepared to go right now, implying that they might go further if the situation worsens for Mr. Khadr.
Well, thank you for your time.
No problem, Andy. Nice talking to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks to Andrew for that story. And that's our program for January 29th, 2010. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5000. 5334, or you can email us at news@citr.ca. Andrew Longhurst produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Monday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Ian Turner from the entire news team at CITR. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for play-by-play sports right here on 101.9 FM, CITR.